There may have been belly laughs on the back benches of the Tories today, but there was plenty of serious stuff for the property industry to consider. Housing, infrastructure, devolution, and perhaps most importantly, tax. That with all the backdrop of revised down GDP figures. My name's David Hatcher, EG's Head of News and Finance, and I'm here with senior reporters Louisa Clarence-Smith and Alex Peace to go over everything that you guys need to know about. Louisa, starting off with the big news of the day, the big shock with capital gains tax. What was the devil in the detail?
Yes, as you say, it was a bit of a shocker today. It wasn't something which was mentioned in Philip Hammond's speech, but upon reading the budget documents, it came out that the government is planning to scrap capital gains tax exemption for overseas investors on commercial property disposals. Basically, it means that from the 1st of April 2019, international investors will be charged this tax on any uplift of their disposals. I think Deloitte said it's probably the biggest change to commercial property taxes since stamp duty came in 2003. The reason people are worried is that they believe this could put off international investors and investing in UK property at a time when they're already concerned about the future of the UK post-Brexit. At the same time, if you have less investors looking to buy your property, it could also affect domestic investors because it could actually lead to a decrease in the value of your property. I spoke to the British Property Federation Policy Director for Finance, Jon Fletcher, about the new tax change and what it really means.
It wasn't anywhere in the speech, it was hidden in the document, but there is a short paragraph that says that from 1st of April 2019, any disposals of UK commercial property by non-UK resident investors will now be subject
certainly alarming stuff. Perhaps the most eye-catching announcement of the day was changes to stamp duties, certainly one to try and attract the voters and first-time buyers. Alex, how did that go down the market?
Well, to be honest, the market's been after a stamp duty change for an awfully long time, but this probably wasn't what they were really looking for, though they're going to pay lip service to the fact that there are a few of their requests have been recognised. What the new proposals are saying is that the stamp duty will be abolished on the value of properties up to £300,000, and the first £300,000 of a first-time bought property in London up to the value of £500,000. What this actually works out at is only about a saving of £5,000 for a first-time buyer. Realistically, it's not going to turn around any of the long-term changes that have been seen in the market, and a lot of the property sector is actually more concerned about the larger houses, the larger units, where the stamp duty makes up a far, far higher percentage of the transaction cost. I was speaking to Susan Emmett at the Policy Exchange, and she was saying along those lines, and we've had more than enough press releases today saying the same thing.
So it sounds like stamp duty was a bit of a damp squib. Alex, were there any more meaningful housing measures brought in by Philip Hammond?
There were one or two, although we probably should actually stick with the damp squibs for a further 30 seconds, which was the urgent review of land banking that he's announced. I mean, this is going to be chaired by Oliver Letwin of West Dorset, and that's going to be reporting for the in time for the spring statement, and Hammond's threatening with some quite big words that there'll be direct intervention if it finds out that people are holding onto land for competitive advantage. What a lot of the sector has been saying is that realistically this shows a bit of a misunderstanding of how house builders build out land, how the planning system works, how strategic land works as well. Louisa, I think you spoke to one particular investor about how that all worked out?
Yeah, I spoke to a couple of investors. Bill Hughes of LNG gave his views on it. And I mean, I think he does think that it is justified as a review.
Well, I think a review to understand the facts, of course, must be helpful. There is no doubt that some organisations seek to own land as an equity play on land prices increasing, and to the extent to which that reduces the supply of housing, that's unhelpful. So if you take the supply scarcity is the features that occur more likely than the land prices go up. So it is worth considering how that gets unlocked, I would say.
I also spoke to Dean Clifford, a small house builder based in central London at Great Marlborough Estates, and he took the other view, which, you know, feels that it's not really justified, land banking isn't an issue, and it's part of that wider anti-developer rhetoric which the UK is embedded in at the moment.
I think it's a real, I think that's playing to the gallery, and I think it's a bit of a sop, to be honest with you. I mean, what will happen? So a house builder is holding on to some land for whatever reason, and then the government will CPO it, so they'll be paying a lot of money, and it's a very lengthy process. Any form of CPO is a lengthy process. And then what will they do? Will they then look to sell it again? Will they try and develop it out themselves? I mean, you know, ideas like this, I fear are slightly playing to the gallery, because actually, in practice, it will take years to CPO, and then what does the government do with it, and how does it show that it's getting best value?
So we've seen some demand-side measures. Alex, the industry has been calling out for more supply-side measures. Was there anything positive on that front?
Yeah, quite a lot, really. Not quite the $44 billion that Hammond said about housing in the actual budget speech. About $15 billion of it's new. Big winner, Homes for England, formerly known as the HCA, although it might be HCA about to be known as Homes for England. We'll find out soon. They probably have about $16 billion to spend, half of that through guarantees and another half of that through actual loans. I spoke to Eddie Lister today, and he was seriously happy about the prospects for the HCA and what it's going to be able to do. He doesn't see them as a developer, despite what some in the sector have said. He does see them as an enabler, and he thinks that combined with Help to Buy, that's going to really push both the demand side and the supply side of housing, rather than just pushing the demand side, which is what a lot of policies have done over the last few years.
The standard complaint, of course, in terms of what's stopping getting Britain building, both on the residential and the commercial side, is the laborious and slow planning system. Alex, was this addressed at all?
Alongside the urgent review of the land banking side, there's been a few other little bits and bobs slipped in that we're going to wait to hear a bit more details on. But intervention, where there's a failure to progress local plans, he's been doing this for a while, first time buyer-led developments, deallocating sites from plans, and increasing housing density in urban areas, just to name a few. He's also done, also slipped in, although didn't announce this again in the budget speech, but there's going to be a consultation on SIL, everyone's favourite subjects, really, really briefly. The two good bits are, first bit is what is known as strategic infrastructure tariff. That basically means where the new combined authorities will be able to raise their own tariffs, much like the GLA has done to fund single infrastructure projects, and removing restrictions on Section 106 pooling, both of which are good things. The less good bits are overcomplicating the process, at speeding up the process of setting and revising SIL, and allowing authorities to set rates which better reflect the uplift in land values between a proposed and existing use, all of which sounds very sensible, probably which will make it a lot more complicated.
And SIL is, of course, important for infrastructure works going forward. Louisa, we had some important announcements on infrastructure, but others were glaring by their omission.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of headline infrastructure announcements which will keep some happy and others not so happy. In particular, Philip Hammond finally delivered on his promise to spread infrastructure investment around the country more evenly, with a £1.7 billion Transforming Cities Fund, which is going to be for the Northern Powerhouse and Midlands Engine. Meanwhile, Crossrail 2 was given barely a mention. He basically just said that the Treasury is going to have consultations with TfL about the future of it. That Transforming Cities Fund is going to be 50% is going to go to the devolved combined authorities. Other 50% is going to be up for grabs from the non-devolved authorities. I spoke to Leeds City Council Deputy Leader James Lewis about this, and he feels that as an area which doesn't have a metro mayor, they're being penalised already for this. So it's going to be take them a lot longer to get hold of this funding, and they have very little certainty.
The economy of the Leeds City region is a £6.8 billion economy
going to make a significant contribution to United Kingdom's overall performance. So it's frustrating that those deals have been held back because of the government's failure to agree a devolution deal with us. And it's frustrating for us here, but actually, our part of the world can make a significant contribution to improving the economic output to the rest of the country. We've got some key sectors that are going to be vital, including things like advanced manufacturing and medical technologies, where we've got make a significant contribution. We've sort of got world leading technologies and not been able to move forward. And again, is frustrating. And I've used that word about 8 times now.
Overall, I think nationally, pretty positive on infrastructure. Eamon Boylan, Chief Executive of Greater Manchester Combined Authority, did welcome the news. Of course, he said they could always do more, but overall, he didn't have too much to complain about. Manchester also got a special mention because they are getting a local industrial strategy. He explained to me what that actually means ahead of the industrial strategy white paper launch in the next few days.
That's something that we've been asking for as part of the continuing dialogue around devolution. We believe that it's very, very important that in developing an industrial strategy, you don't only look at sectoral considerations, you look at spatial considerations as well, and understand how the various components of a place need to come together in order to support a sustainable development strategy. So that links to our ambitions around skills, as well as our ambitions around sectoral development. So we're very pleased that the government has committed to work with us to model how that strategy might be developed.
And Manchester, of course, wasn't the only region that got some good news in the budget.
Indeed. So a bit of news on devolution. A second devolution deal was announced for the West Midlands, and a new Devo deal was announced for north of the Tyne. Hammond also said that government's going to open negotiations for a Belfast City deal and consult with local authorities about further Devo deals in Northern Ireland.
Long awaited, there was also news on business rates. The Chancellor didn't go as far as some would have liked, seeing a total reduction in terms of business rate bills, but he did change the revaluation from a 5-year period to a 3-year period, and from CPI to the more modern and perhaps more modest RPI index. I spoke to Jerry Sherder of Gerald Eve, who's been campaigning for these changes, about what he thought of the Chancellor's announcement.
Well, it is, because businesses have been campaigning for many years now for a revaluation system that responds more quickly to changes in the property market, in the state of the economy, and therefore the performance of their own individual businesses. And whilst we're going to have to wait a few years until the 3-year revaluation cycle kicks in, it will be positive when it arrives. Devil in the detail, of course, and precisely how the Valuation Office Agency will be able to deliver these more frequent revaluations, because only last year in a discussion paper, the government said actually there were pretty sizable problems in actually using the current system to deliver more frequent revaluations. So that will require some changes and, I would say, some more resources at the VOA.
Well, there's certainly plenty there for the industry to chew over. For more information, you can go to egi.co.uk/news/budget17 or see your EG this Saturday for more. Thanks for joining us.